You know the vibes. Welcome back to another episode of the Hoop Genius podcast, brought to you by NBA 2K25. It's myself, Mo Mutsi, alongside me, as always, the three-time NBA champion, Mr. BJ Armstrong. BJ, another great day?
Another terrific day, Mo.
Only terrific day.
So, but no, all is good. All is good. And how are you doing today?
I'm doing good. I got a little workout in.
Oh wow!
You sound so surprised, like I ain't been doing it for a whole year.
Oh well, you've been very consistent.
We down 50 pounds last year. We're gonna go down another 50 this year.
Oh,
and then 2026, we're gonna get in that weight room, go even harder, and I'm gonna turn into a prime Shaquille O'Neal.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? This summer, this year, I just got to get ready for the summertime. You know, Ibiza's got to see me. You know, Cancun's got to see me. So I got to be shredded. But then after this summer, I'm gonna get back to the big boy lifestyle and bulk up again. You know what I'm saying?
Not Shaq, but the Mac. Okay.
But it's all good. I was very disappointed yesterday, actually, though, BJ.
Oh, what happened?
Because the NBA has been marketing this week as Rivals Week, right?
Okay.
So it's supposed to be Rivals Week, where, you know, the hottest matchups in the NBA and classic and budding rivalries take center stage from the 21st to the 25th of January. Mm-hmm. Last night's slate of games, I was having a conversation with a friend who, my friend is a very casual NBA fan. You know, he'll watch the playoffs and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So we're playing some PlayStation. He asked me, yo, what's going on in the NBA? What's the games tonight? What are you watching? I said, bro, you know what? Tonight, none of these games are moving the needle for me. We had the Blazers versus the Heat. The biggest story from that game was Jimmy Butler wearing Phoenix Suns colored shoes and then proceeding to score 13 points in a loss to the Portland Trail Blazers, who were absolutely terrible. Then you've got the Knicks versus the Nets, and the Nets are absolutely terrible. Then you've got the Magic versus the Raptors, and the Raptors are absolutely terrible, even though they did pretty well. Then the Sixers versus the Nuggets. Of course, Embiid's not going to play in a game in Denver. It's been like 2,000 days since he played in Denver. And then the Wizards versus the Lakers. And I was like, which part of these matchups is supposed to be Rivals Week? Like, this is supposed to be an exciting week of the regular season, but every game on the schedule looked very dull. So I was pretty disappointed. But there was a trade last night, which caught my attention.
Okay.
And it's interesting how timing works out, because what was the final thing that we said on yesterday's show? Do you remember the last thing we said on the show?
Mo, after, over 600 shows or something?
618.
I have no idea. We were talking
about the Utah Jazz.
Okay.
And we ended the show talking about Danny Ainge. And I said, Danny knows what he's doing. You know, a little bit cryptically. Mm-hmm, a few hours later, the Utah Jazz made a trade with the Phoenix Suns for an unprotected, Phoenix Suns' final unprotected first-round pick that they have available in 2031, which seems like a long time away. But bear in mind, in 2031, Kevin Durant will be retired, and Devin Booker may very well be on a different team. Maybe he'll be on your Detroit Pistons. So that pick is very valuable. Because they don't really have young players. They don't really have much of a future if they can't get a championship with this run. And they traded it to the Utah Jazz in exchange for the least favorable first in 2025 out of Cleveland or Minnesota, which is most likely going to be the Cleveland's pick, which will probably be the 30th pick in the draft. The least favorable of Cleveland, Minnesota, or Utah's pick in 2027, which again will be a late first round pick. And the least favorable of Cleveland, Minnesota, or Utah's pick in 2029, which will most likely be a very late pick. The Phoenix Suns have done this trade because they wanted to have more first-round picks in what is looking like their efforts to acquire Mr. Jimmy Butler. This move leaves the Phoenix Suns with zero of their own tradable first-round picks and only a bunch of, kind of worse selections if everything goes wrong in Phoenix, because you can't trade back-to-back first round picks, right? You can only trade alternating ones. So they've got rid of all of their own, and now Utah has some of the most valuable first round picks in the league moving forward. And it looks like the Phoenix Suns will try and package all of these picks into a deal for Jimmy Butler. But what was your reaction to that trade?
I don't get it. I don't get it.
You don't get it for Utah, or you don't get it for Phoenix?
I don't get it for Phoenix. I don't
I
get it.
get it for Utah because this is, that Danny Ainge did this in Boston by taking the Nets' future first round picks when they thought they were building a contender and they flamed out. And now he's doing it with, he's done it with the Timberwolves to get those picks in exchange for Rudy Gobert. And if Anthony Edwards ever decides to leave Minnesota, those picks become very valuable. And now he's doing it with the Phoenix Suns. For Phoenix, I'm imagining, and what the rumors are, is that all of these picks will be used in a some sort of package deal for Jimmy Butler. And the current rumors are that the Bucks, the Heat, and the Suns, and a fourth team will be involved in a trade. Bradley Beal said he's open to waiving his no trade clause for the Milwaukee Bucks, where the framework of some sort of trade would look like Jimmy Butler going to Phoenix, Bradley Beal going to Milwaukee, Chris Middleton and Bobby Portis maybe going to the Miami Heat, or a fourth team if they want to get involved and absorb salary in this trade. And then those three picks that Phoenix just acquired would be used to facilitate this trade and sweeten the pot for Miami or any of the other teams in the deal.
I don't get it, but it's not for me to get.
Well, let me ask you this. The Phoenix Suns swapping Jimmy Butler and Bradley Beal, right? If they essentially swap Bradley Beal for Jimmy Butler, does this move the needle for you? How much does this improve their chances at championship? Do you see it actually making a difference? Or do you see them just acquiring another player who needs the ball in their hands to be effective, having less shooting, but slightly more defense than what Bradley Beal offers them?
This is what I don't understand in the deal. Is I'm going to acknowledge the request that has been made for this trade, which is whoever trades for him, meaning Jimmy Butler, what is the commitment that team is going to acquire and assume once they get this player? This is what I'm most interested in. I'm not interested anymore of what's happening on the court. I'm just interested in the financial ramifications of this move and what that means. And I can only go by the report, and the reports seem to indicate that a max deal or somewhere near that deal was the request, because otherwise he would still be in Miami. Based on what I've read, I'm just going on what I've read. I don't know. I haven't spoken to anyone in Miami about it. I don't know anything about the trade. However, based on what I have read about this, is that that seems to be one of the requirements for a potential trade based on what I've read. So, in looking at that, so now you would have Jimmy Butler, I would assume, Devin Booker, and Kevin Durant as your top three or big three. And then you would go from there. I'm just assuming. I don't know. But maybe that is what we're saying at this time. Okay. And looking at their team, there seems to be some when you look at their roster, you look at their team, there seems to be a lot of other things that they need to get resolved with their team. If we're talking about, trying to win a championship. But I don't know. I really don't know. So I'm just gonna sit on the sidelines on this one and just watch, because it's not moving the needle for me in when you're building a team. But maybe they have other moves that will address their real issues, which are, rebounding, defending. Maybe, I don't know. I don't know. But I'm just based on what I've heard and what you just said there. So, but we'll see how this plays out.
Okay, well, for the Utah Jazz, it's a great trade because over the next few years, they have 9 guaranteed firsts, 2 lightly protected one, and if the Jazz keep off their first, they have a total of 12 potential first round picks, right? 2025, they have their own pick if it lands between 1 and 10, and the best of Cleveland or Minnesota's pick. 2026, they have their own pick if it's in the top 8, or if they don't have that and it's sent out in a trade, they have the best of the Cavs or the Timberwolves. 2027, they have the Lakers pick if it lands anywhere between 5 and 30, and they have the best and second best of their own pick, the Timberwolves pick and the Cavs pick. In 2028, they have the best of their own pick or the Cavs pick, which is unprotected. 2029, they have the best and second best of their own, the Cavs and the Timberwolves pick. In 2030, they own their own pick, and in 2031, they own their own first round pick and an unprotected first round pick from the Phoenix Suns, which is a silly amount of picks, a lot of which are high value. They could be packaged in some sort of trade, or they could be used to pick young players that they then add to their roster. So things looking pretty good in the long-term picture for the Utah Jazz. But it's going to be an interesting route because when you're rebuilding, and this is like something people talk about all the time with OKC. If your team is ahead of schedule and you've got all of these picks, you're in kind of a dilemma because you really don't have enough minutes or roster spots for all of those players that you're going to draft onto your team. And you can't always just package them in
Oh
deals
yeah,
to get
oh
the
yes
players
you
you
do.
want.
Well, remember, just because you have these players doesn't mean just because you would have, for instance, with the OKC Thunder, they're much further down the process than, let's say, the Utah Jazz. You're constantly evaluating your team to improve your team. How do you improve it? You improve it through the draft. So you have to evaluate which players are in the draft. Just because you have a player, now we can say this years later. However, it's really difficult to do when you look at your team. You say, oh, wait a minute. We always talk about that draft in 84 when the Portland Trailblazers elected not to draft Michael Jordan. You're constantly evaluating the players in the draft, and you're trying to project who they could become. So just because you have the picks doesn't mean that, oh, well, we have a 45 win team now, so we don't have to look at that. No, you have to look at it because in the draft, you improve your team. You improve your team through trades, you improve your team through free agency, and you improve your team from within. You may draft a player, and it may take them a year or two. You can look at Shai Alexander, for instance. This isn't the player that we all saw for the LA Clippers when he was drafted into this league. So players improve, and that's your job to do that. So you have those picks so that if you see that player, if you see a young player that you think or you're high on, you can secure that player because you're constantly looking for elite players, regardless of what your team is currently doing. That's so good for Danny Ainge that he has acquired as many of these picks, and Danny has shown that he understands that. You look at this Boston Celtics team now, all those players came under Danny Ainge's watch. That's what it is.
Well, not pausing isn't Drew Holiday, but the core of the team, yeah.
Okay, two players in particular,
Tatum and Brown,
Jalen
yeah.
Tatum and Brown. That's
Yeah.
okay. Now, if you're telling me the other two, you can, all right, well, that's debatable. But those two, for sure, where they were drafted, there was a substantial amount of evaluating going on to make sure those were the right guys, in particular, Jason Tatum, in particular, because they had the number one pick that year.
Yeah, and they traded backwards with Philly and secured another first round pick for the following year. But we're talking about OKC, right? BJ, I had a question. They talked about this on TNT the other night. Who do you have down? If we say OKC is the best team in the West, who's the second best team in the Western Conference?
For the playoffs, because they're proven, I would say the Denver Nuggets.
I would agree because the Denver Nuggets now are a game and a half out of the second seed. after a very rocky start to the season, they are 27-16. They're 8-2 over their last 10. They've won three straight now. Russell Westbrook and Jokic have insane chemistry. I don't know what the record is when Russell Westbrook's a starter now, but it's insanely good. Jamal Murray is starting to kind of look more Jamal Murray-ish. And I'm really liking what I'm seeing from Denver. Do you think that they need to make any moves to address the depth that we always talk about? Or do you
Absolutely,
think.
absolutely. You're always looking.
No, but what if, what the question I'm asking though is,
Okay.
even if they weren't to make a move, if they were to stand pat with the roster as is, do you think they have enough firepower to win the Western Conference in the playoffs?
Jokic alone, whether they make a move or they don't, I will always give him a fighter's chance. He's just that good. He's that dominant as an elite player. He's, I don't know what his stats were last year, but looking at the numbers he's putting up this year, they have to be comparable. If you were comparing his MVP seasons to this year, I mean, Jokic alone gives you a chance. So whether they make a move or not, Jokic is capable of carrying a series all the way through the NBA Finals. He's that good. I expect him to be, if not the best player in any series. He's, not the second best player. He's 1A and 1B. For instance, right now, Shea Alexander, I feel, is the best player right now in the NBA. Well, Jokic is 1B. And I mean, when I tell you just 1B, you might want to say 1AA. Okay, because both of them are just playing at an elite level. And Jokic, he is that player. So I think they have more than a fighter's chance, especially now you have Russell, Jamal Murray. They don't have a lot of depth. If there's one thing that you can point to, so that obviously he's got to be careful, foul trouble, so forth and so on. But other than that, they have a chance in any series that they happen to be involved in the postseason.
Absolutely. It's just exciting times. This is going to be the final episode of the week. I'm off
Oh.
to the city of Paris for a
Oh,
couple of days. I'm
okay.
going to see our friend.
For work, I would hope, right?
Kind of.
Okay.
You know what? It's not for work because I'm not technically doing any work out there.
Okay.
But what I am doing is I am going to be a fan and watch our friend Mr. Wembanyama and his San Antonio Spurs playing against the Indiana Pacers
Okay.
out there and do a little bit of networking,
Okay.
shake a
Okay.
few hands, have
Okay.
a few conversations. I'm not doing the broadcast. I'm just enjoying the weekend. But it's crazy the amount of love that Wemby's been getting because they've been in Paris all week so far, and the fans have been going crazy for Wemby out there, and it's like a whole because now we're seeing a generation of French players coming through. So you've got Wemby, you've got Alex Saar was the number two pick last year, Bilal Coulibaly, even though the Washington Wizards are awful, he's been really promising this season. But I don't think people are realizing the generational shift that could potentially be happening here because all the kids who are growing up now are witnessing Wembanyama because Wembanyama was inspired by Tony Parker, so on and so forth. We could be in 10, 15, 20 years from now, we could have half the league being French kids. Do you know what I mean? Like,
But it's interesting. It goes in cycles. What's interesting is, there's one thing to be in the league, and then there's another thing to be impactful in the league. Yes. And yes, players are entering into the NBA from various places from around the world. What's fascinating to me is the impact that you have. And this is a this is a this is this is a big question. It's truly now a global game. Our game is now global. The NBA is a global game, no doubt about it. We started initially, okay, and if my memory serves correct, Hakeem Olajuwon was the first international player, I believe, to win the MVP award, right? Can you check that, Mo?
I believe that to be correct.
Okay. That was very significant because you're not only talking about the best league, you're talking about a player that ascended to be the best
1994,
player,
yeah.
to be the best player in the best league. Now, that to me was impactful because prior to that, or somewhere near that, there were players who played in the NBA or were in the NBA. But the significance of that to me is what served as an inspiration for others to say, I could do that too. That to me was the moment where you said, oh, wow, like Hakeem Olajuwon not only came to America, he's ascended to a level of excellence that he was recognized as the best, not one of, but the best of the best.
I heard something y yesterday. I don't know if it's true, but someone was telling me that when Hakeem Olajuwon first went to America for the first time, he picked, because he went to the University of Houston before getting drafted by the Houston Rockets, that he apparently picked the University of Houston because the airport security guy in JFK told him that the climate in Texas is the most similar to Nigeria. And that's why he went to Houston, apparently, which I think is pretty funny. That
Again,
just,
I have no idea.
I
I'm
don't
not
know if it's
gonna
true, but if it is true, there is a airport security guy out there who changed the course of NBA history forever.
So I'm gonna that would assume that Akeem was just going to New York and
Well,
this is
he must have been
like
going to visit colleges and schools and, you know.
oh, okay. Yeah, I don't know. But what I do know, I think the coach at the time, the late Guy Lewis, was at the University of Houston at the time. But Hakeem Olajuwon, to me, is what you said could be. You send it to the best of the best. Now, that to me was a significant moment because I lived kind of through that era. I kind of followed Hakeem Olajuwon because of his impact, not only at the professional level, but he created an entire movement, the Phi Slamma Jamma, down there at the University of Houston. And he was very impactful as a collegiate player, along with Clyde Drexler. What he was able to do. And then he went on to ascend to a level, a Hall of Fame level career, NBA champion, so forth and so on. Now, that to me was the impact because regardless of where you're from in the world, you saw that a international player came to America and the NBA, which is recognized as the best league in the world. Not one of the best came here and he was recognized as the best. And he had a year of year, that MVP season. I happened to be playing in the NBA at that time. And when I tell you he was that good, Mo, he was that good. Okay. He's as good as I've seen. When people say, who's the best player you've seen? Well, I can say this undeniably that Hakeem Olajuwon that year was one of the greatest players I've seen. He was that good that year. He was incredible. Okay. And I happen to have seen a few great players, but he's in that room of excellence, as I like to refer to. He's in the room. Okay. Not the Hall of Fame. He's in the room of excellence.
I feel like he's one of the most underrated. You know when people have all-time conversations about top 10 players of all time? I feel like he's the most underrated in all of these conversations by
I
people. I don't
don't
think they
know.
really understand.
Well, no. Well, let's get them to understand. I don't know who you listening to. I don't know what you heard about me. I don't know what you heard about the NBA. But let me assure everyone here, I saw a man play in the NBA, let's go all the way back to the beginning. It's hard for me to believe that there are 9 players who've put on a uniform that's better than him. It's hard for me to say, okay? It's hard for me to believe that you're going to tell me that there were 9 players that were better than Hakeem Olajuwon, regardless of generation. Forget that old school, new school.
The funny part is Kobe, LeBron, even Dwight Howard, they all go to Houston to work out with Hakeem Olajuwon, to learn from him, to learn how to improve their footwork, to learn how to score with their back to the basket. So,
I don't even want to underestimate. I'm going to put Hakeem Olajuwon, and I'm going to start this right here, right now, because I want to make sure that wherever you listening to, that you understand, we have the Hall of Fame, right? And people get to the Hall of Fame, and congratulations to everyone's made it. But there is a room that is recognized by the basketball community that I'm going to give it a name. It's called the Room of Excellence. For one season, I've seen what excellence looks like. Sometimes I would happen to be on the team. Sometime you happen to play against those players. Hakeem Olajuwon, I think it was 94, I believe. Mm-hmm. One of those years.
94, he won there, MVP. 94, 95. Because
Mo and I are going to create it. There is a room of excellence that has to be, the only way you can get in, it has to be unanimous. It can't be, well, maybe. No, there's a room of excellence. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And Hakeem Olajuwon is in that room. So there's no undervalue under, and everybody who played in that era would agree that Hakeem Olajuwon deserves to be in that room. Okay. He was, when I tell you, sensational in every phase of the game. Defending, scoring, passing, moves, whatever you want to call it. If you call it in the game of basketball.
There ain't no flaw in his game. No one can show me that he had a weakness. Room. No weakness.
Forget the top 75. He's in the room of excellence. If you want to know what the center position could look like, just go look at him.
Mm-hmm.
He will give you a version of what it could look like, provided you have the ability to do this. I don't want to hear about someone said they taught him how to do that. No one taught anybody how to do the dream shake.
Mm.
No one taught someone to utilize that level of footwork. There's only one person walking on the planet that can have that. And you have to be in the room of excellence, because to be in that room, there has to be creativity. When you say a signature move, if you just say dream shake, everybody should know what that is.
Mm.
And if you don't know what it is, then reconsider calling yourself an NBA fan.
YouTube is free.
So let's not undervalue the room of brilliance. He was absolutely brilliant. Like when you say an artist, he was an artist. That man there played the game, and you were just like, how did he learn how to do that? Like, he was playing at angles you never saw before. He was doing things that was just, it was just a gift. So he's in that room. I'm going beyond the 75. The 75 is just for the novice. We're going to the room of brilliance, where you have to have qualifications to make this room. And not just my opinion or Mo's opinion. We have to go to the council to say, is he even considered? And the council, you and I know who the council is, Mo. Okay, this isn't for public. We go to the council and say, Is he good enough to be in the room of brilliance? Okay? Hakeem Olajuwon is there. I want to make this clear. There is no argument of who he is. I don't want to hear this. No. If you don't know, just go study him.
And one thing I'll say on Hakeem, he lived in the UK for a little bit. His daughter came over here to study, and he moved over here. I met with him a couple of times. Had some great conversation with him. Great, great human being. Not just a great basketball player, great human being. But he would spend a lot of his time. He partnered with a basketball club here, and he would do camps in the summertime to kind of pass on his knowledge to the kids that are trying to learn basketball over here as well. So shout out to Hakeem every time. The Room of Excellence. A few people have asked me, actually, after we mentioned
The Room of Excellence, and then there's another room behind that called the Room of Brilliance.
Okay.
The Room of Brilliance, which there is a council.
Coming like that lives in the Jedi that lives, Council.
Yes, that lives in the shadows. They did not acknowledge what is popular.
And I'm gonna tell you this: if you flop, you will never make it into this room.
Mo, we cannot disclose what are the requirements.
If you cry, baby, you can't make it into this room.
Hakeem Olajuwon sits in the room. Oh, he's of comfy. Brilliance.
He's got a sofa with his name on it.
Yes. Yeah. I don't want to hear, well, he's undervalued. No. Brilliance, you might not see it because everyone can't see it. You shouldn't be able to see it. But we want to make sure that we are letting you know he was brilliant. He wasn't just an NBA All-Star. That didn't give him his proper recognition as a player. This man was that good. That man was, there was good, and then there was like, oh, wow.
No, I think the best way to describe it is, do you know how good you have to be to get picked ahead of Michael Jordan, and yet still no one's mad that they picked you instead of Michael Jordan? I think that just sums it up, because I don't think there's many players ever that you could say that about.
Well, I can say it, and that was the right pick. Okay,
Facts. You know, there was a potential trade at the time that would have, if it had gone through, would have ended the Houston Rockets with Hakeem, Michael, and Clyde Drexler all on the team at the same time.
I don't know. I'm going to say this. I don't know about that trade, what have you. But you just got me fired up when you talk about that, because there aren't many players you can talk about that
The offer from the Portland Trailblazers was for Ralph Sampson.
Oh, man.
And Clyde Drexler. They were willing to swap those and have some other picks involved. But anyway, I digress. We will see if Mr. Wembanyama can continue his journey to one day maybe ending up inside the Room of Excellence / Brilliance. And yes, I will be there in Paris. If any of you guys listening to this are going to be there, say what's up if you see me. It's always good to see you guys and talk some basketball. And we'll be back on Monday, back to regular scheduled programming, provided I don't get lost amongst the beautiful women of Paris and never return.
No, if I do like this, who does that remind you of?
This guy's in his own world today.
Oh, yeah. Hey, I've looked in the room. I saw the players in the room.
Hey, we're going to have to save that. We're going to save that for the offseason. So if you want to hear more about the Room of Excellence, make sure you subscribe to the show, YouTube, Spotify, Apple, wherever you get your podcast from. There's only one podcast in the Room of Excellence, and that's this one. So stay locked in. And until next time, BJ, enjoy having a couple of days off. Enjoy not having to listen to me sitting there dream shaking in his office. My favorite thing ever is, have you seen Kevin Garnett telling the story about Hakeem Olajuwon trash talking him?
Kevin Durant?
Kevin Garnett.
Oh.
He said Hakeem used to say stuff like, I'm hitting him with lateral movement. He cannot do anything about it. And that was his trash talk. And you can't say anything back to him. The hell you mean you hit him with lateral movement? Hey, that's my favorite story.
You know what?
I'm hitting him with lateral movement.
I'm going to say this. There weren't many bigs. There weren't many bigs that you would come off. Actually, I'm trying to think.
That's crazy.
There's really only two bigs that when you came off of a screen roll that you were, I was always concerned that they could steal the ball from you.
Yeah, because he's got the quickness.
David Robinson was one. Mm. And then Hakeem Olajuwon.
David Robinson, also another player who's at risk of going down another rabbit hole. Another player who's massively underrated in all these all-time conversations. But we will save those for another day.
We got to
wrap this show up. Yes, we'll see you guys on Monday. Appreciate you. And until next time.
But Mo, hold on. Before you say that. Mo, I just want to shake it off.
If you listen on audio, you gotta watch the YouTube today because BJ's on one today.
What? When you have a move that can also go to podcasting and everyone knows what it means, that's why he's in the room of brilliance.
Hell yeah.
So I'm going to shake this off and then say get buckets. Because you know what? I'm going to get a bucket.
You got to hit him with a lateral movement and get buckets.